And welcome to House of Comments. I'm Charlotte Henry. She's Emma Bunnell. Emma, you know that Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times?
Can I stop living in interesting times,
right.
please?
I'd like a little bit of boring once in a while. Let's start in the United States, talking of interesting times. Donald Trump has started tapping the people he wants in his government. There's a few notable ones. I don't quite know who to start with, so we'll start with RFK Jr., who is going to be basically the American Health Secretary.
I mean, it's mental. So I've been thinking and thinking about this. RFK Jr. has some absolutely fundamentally wacky and dangerous ideas. And when I say dangerous, I mean, I can't remember exactly which country it is, but there's an African country where he went to a conference and funded a lot of work in an anti-vax movement. And there was an outbreak of measles and lots of people died. So I don't mean dangerous in a, ooh, that's a bit scary. I mean people die when anti-vax movements happen. On the other hand, it is fundamentally important that those of us who, not those Americans more than those of us in the UK, but it, you know, this will be imported and is being imported over here, who hate the skepticism of vaccines and science, are not then wedded to the marketization, commercialization, big pharma aspects of that protection. Because actually, big pharma do a lot of things wrong. I've read Empire of Pain about the Sackler family and everything that they did in terms of the appalling opioid crisis in America, which again, we're managing to slightly import here in a completely different way, thankfully, because we have a completely different healthcare system. But so that's going to be a subtlety that needs not to be lost when criticising the appointment of RFK Jr., which we absolutely should do because he's nuts and has brain worms.
Yeah, he's completely mad. The anti-vax stuff is genuinely scary and, as you rightly say, dangerous. Look, there's also, you're right, there are criticisms and questions to be asked of Big Pharma. I think we saw it in some ways at its best during COVID, the way it turned around those vaccines. I'm very in favour of the companies that make us vaccines. They got an absolute whacking in the stock market, I saw, when RFK Jr.'s the announcement was made. There's a few other ones. We're going to have to do it. Let's talk Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy. The Department of Government Efficiency is going to have two heads. Sounds very efficient.
Actually, I'm sorry, I'm fed up with that line a little bit because it's bullshit. Actually, lots of co-working directors work really efficiently and well. Will these two? No, of course they won't. They're both massive egos who want to be in charge of everything. But the idea that co-directors is inherently inefficient is not a good idea and not something we should be pushing.
It doesn't seem very efficient. I mean, there are co-working organisations, ways in which you can split jobs that do work very, very efficiently and work to the benefit of women, particularly. That is absolutely true. But this is not going to be an efficient setup.
This is not that, but the idea, there are so many better attacks on this whole thing than co-working.
One of the things for me that stands out, actually, this goes to the whole thing that's going on, actually, but it's really exemplified in this Trumpy, in this Department of Government of Inefficiency, is that it always...
That makes it dodgy, not doge.
Well, I'll leave that with you. It just feels like they're trolling the world and like it's all a bit of a joke. And like it really, really isn't.
I mean, the name alone is quite clearly just a way of being. It's like when Elon Musk bid the amount for Twitter he did because it was a joke about being stoned.
Yeah, all of
and
that. It's
then
all a
got
joke.
Stuck paying that amount for Twitter. Again, not an example of great efficiency in spending. I've actually just finished reading, or listening to rather, the book Character Limits, which is all about the Elon Musk takeover of Twitter. And what really struck me coming out of it was the Elon Musk runs SpaceX and Tesla pretty well because they are singularly product-focused organizations.
I mean, the things he's doing with SpaceX are genuinely amazing.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But when he tried to translate that to just a social media company, so a private company, which he took private, it hasn't worked because the fundamental needs of the audience of that country, a company, are much more dispersed and diverse than the fundamental needs of the audience of Tesla or in particular SpaceX. So now expand that to the fundamental needs both of a public body, which are fundamentally different from a business, and the audience of that public body, which is everybody, not everybody who agrees with you. And I just don't see how this is going to work. What Musk did at Twitter was cut without really thinking any deeper than, I need to cut lots and lots of people because we're spending lots and lots of money and I've overpaid for this organization. If he goes into the government and does the same thing, one of the fundamental reasons that the Democrats lost the election was that voters felt that inflation touched their lives and that not enough had been done about it. If they feel that the government is removing services or not intervening in places where they expect them to, because too many people have been cut from this inefficient government, you can hear the air quotes, listeners, then I think that's a fundamental political mistake.
Yeah, but he doesn't. I'm not sure I agree or disagree with you, but he doesn't care. And also, there's a fundamental point that Twitter was just not a good business to buy and spend a lot of money on.
Well, indeed.
That's a whole different issue. It wasn't a good business with them. Like, it's just a very difficult business to make money from. Anyway, we will obviously have to come down. For me, the thing is, I'm just fed up with, like, let's call it what it is. It's silly boys playing around and it's going to affect people's lives. And I'm rather fed up with that, actually. And I don't like that attitude to government. And it's all a bit of a joke for them. And I'm rather fed up with that. And there's also massive, I have to say, conflicts of interest here. You know, this department and Elon Musk's apparent closeness to the president-elect, when SpaceX, which is, again, an amazing, truly amazing company, needs money from NASA continually, works with NASA. Like, there are massive conflicts of interest between the public and private sectors here, and it's going to be a huge, messy issue in the years to come. Anyway, we have more pleasant things to turn to. It's a really positive show, actually, because we're going to do Death and Religion now.
I mean, it's fascinating that the two we haven't done are the ones who probably impact on us the most, which is Tulsi Gabbard as head of intelligence.
Yeah, which
misnomer. And Marco Rubio, probably the most mainstream of his pick.
Yes, that's sort of why I didn't bring him up, because he's a pretty bog standard.
Yeah. Anyway, Tulsi Gabbard as head of intelligence has got to be terrifying, MI5.
Well, and the rest of the Five Eyes network.
Yeah, exactly.
And so on and so forth. Yes, here in the UK, though, there's obviously been this huge scandal in the Church of England. Justin Welby, the Archbishop of Canterbury, resigned. It's over his failure to act on this prolific child abuser, John Smith. He'd been in post for 11 years anyway, and eventually it was just basically became too much, the pressure that he hadn't done enough, that he knew about it. I mean, there's this awful thing where they seem to have sort of sent this abuser off to Africa and just tried to get rid of him. I mean, to say what a
outsourcing
mess.
Outsourcing the problem.
Yeah, I mean, to say what a mess seems to be downplaying it somewhat.
Yeah, I mean, if you listen to the details of the abuse, it's absolutely horrendous.
Horrific.
You know, young boys, I think it was mostly boys, mm-hmm. being beaten so badly that they were wearing adult nappies for days. Some with scars for life as a result of these beatings. And I've seen, I think, from people sometimes who have liked things that Welby has done in terms of intervening over social policy issues, a little bit of an argument that he's a scapegoat. And I just think that that is so horrendous because, sorry, he knew about this guy at least since 2013. And if you look into the Private Eye stories, probably considerably before then. And not only, and in 2013, this is not a period in which the British public were not keen to see institutional cover-ups of abuse be dealt with, because we are talking shortly after the Savile scandal.
Yep.
So it's not like there was any of that kind of, oh, it was a different time then nonsense could be applied.
No.
So Welby is not a scapegoat. He failed fundamentally in one of the key parts of his role and had to go and should have gone earlier.
Is that you think this was just eventually it ultimately comes down to the top, you know, the
buck
attention.
Stops there, you know?
The buck stops at the top.
Yeah, and he failed at different points in his career when it came to this individual. And I wonder, you know, this is the story we know about. If the church has been this successful for this long, there was a report into this guy's activities in 1982. I was seven.
I was minus five.
Shut up.
No, but I'm not saying.
I know you were. It's just
I'm saying it to show.
Just feeling old.
I'm saying it to show how long this stuff has gone on. I'm not making light of it at all.
But I, you know, if this case has been covered up for that long, what else is there to discover that we don't yet know about? And that that question has got to hang over Welby, but also has to be on the desk of whoever takes over from him as a top priority.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen this obviously affect the Vatican and the Catholic Church for many years.
Yeah.
And the effect that's had, it seems to be going into the Anglican church as well now. Look, we're a politics show, so I guess what we have to do is look at this from a political perspective. For one thing, obviously, the archbishops and so on sit in the House of Lords. There are bishops in the Lords.
Does this mean Welby loses his seat in the Lords, or will he sit there next to whoever gets his job next?
I truly have no idea. That will be one of the things that's very interesting to watch. I did notice that in the House of Lords reform bill that's currently going through, there was an amendment to it, wasn't there, to try and remove the bishops as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this kind of incident gives that more impetus.
I mean, the House of Lords needs wholesale reform, but it's probably going to get piecemeal reform, and that would definitely be a piece that I think would be important. Aren't we the only... Us in Iran are the only countries in the world in which clerics sit in
the parliament. I mean,
that
I don't...
It doesn't feel like great company.
It sounds perfectly plausible. I'd have to have a quick Google, but that sounds entirely plausible. So then I think that could be one of the political fallouts for this. And that will be interesting to watch. You and I think we'll excuse ourselves from doing sort of guessing games of who will overtake.
Oh, I wouldn't have the first clue, despite sort of
No.
nominally being an Anglican.
Well, if you don't mind, I was going to ask you about that, how it feels to be, as you put it, nominally an Anglican.
Well, I'm a regular churchgoer, Charlotte. I go exactly once a year on Christmas Eve.
Yes, exactly. I knew that it was regular. Yes, regular. I've been to Midnight Mass. It's very nice.
It is, it's lovely.
But I, if you don't mind, I was going to ask, how does this, as a nominal Anglican, not make you feel or make that community feel?
So I don't know how it makes the community feel because I'm not part of it. I don't have a congregation. I go to my mum's church. It's my mum that I've been thinking about because my mum has just stepped down quite recently as the safeguarding officer for her church,
Oh, how interesting.
which she did for many years and was exceptionally good at. In fact, I sent her a text once the Welby news broke saying, I believe the C of E have an opening for someone with a strong safeguarding background to sell
I
them
mean,
a job at Super Jan.
I have to say, based on my experience of Burnell women, I think they could probably do worse.
No. Oh, my mum is brilliant. She really took that role very, very seriously. I don't know anything, of course, about the cases, the details of the cases she was dealing with. She would always go into another room. She had a separate laptop for it, a separate phone for it, all of these things. So I couldn't tell you about what she was dealing with, but I can tell you that the impact of dealing with it was quite hard on a 70-something-year-old woman. And the problem is that she happened to have all the right professional background to do this. She started her career as a social worker. She, has sat on an adoption panel for many, many, many
Wow.
years. In fact, I think she's just stepped down from that as well. So she really does have the chops for it. But I don't know that that's true of every church
Well, I was going to
safeguarding
say,
officer because it's a voluntary position.
yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. As I say, I wouldn't mess with any Burnell women based on my experience, but
Oh, I think you mess with me quite often, Charlotte.
yeah, but there's a line I wouldn't dare cross. And I've met your sister as well.
Now you want scary.
Quite. But no, this is we're joking because it's sort of the only thing you can do in these horrible stories sometimes. But these institutions, and there's all sorts of them in this country that have had to endure similar scandals. I don't want any, we're talking about the Church of England because that's the story of this moment.
Yeah, and I think it's the same story that we saw at the BBC, at the
Right.
various hospital trusts, which is too many institutions who feel that they can and should mark their own homework when it
That's a
comes to this
great way
sort of
of
thing.
putting it.
And actually, so safeguarding officers like my mum are brilliant, and do good work, but ultimately, you've got to have an external body who is not conflicted about the reputation of the organisation overseeing this sort of thing.
I think that's a really, really important point, and it leads me to the next thing I want to discuss, which is what interventions, if any, could the government make? Now, ultimately, of course, the head of the Church of England is the king.
Yes.
don't start. I know what you're thinking. but that so this scandal obviously does have some impact on the royal family by definition. I'm not saying for one moment the king, the late queen, or anyone else in the royal households knew about this, but they are the ultimate head of the Church of England. But there's also the government. We've mentioned the House of Lords already. Now, if I were Sir Keir Starmer, the leader of the House of Lords, or whatever else, I wouldn't want to touch this with a barge pole. I would
No, and I
let.
don't think they should touch it with a barge
Okay,
pole.
that's what I was going to ask you.
We do have an established church in the same way we have an established monarchy. And the reason they're sort of allowed to continue to exist is that they don't get involved in government and government doesn't get involved in them.
Although, of course, in the case of, as you said yourself, the Archbishop Justin Welby did get involved in politics.
There is a perfect role for the church. He got involved in politics when it came to moral social issues and commenting on
Right.
them, and that is a perfectly valid thing for a faith leader to do. I won't always agree with their take. Sometimes they take positions on moral issues that I fundamentally disagree with.
Sure.
But I think they have a place to play in that discussion. What they don't do is say, the Rwanda scheme is evil, therefore vote Labour.
No
Or,
faith leader has done that.
yeah, or,
Although, yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking
the
in the.
two-child benefit cap is evil, vote Tory.
Yeah.
What they do is say, we think these are fundamentally wrong, according to our faith and scripture.
Yes, sure. Sure. But it's just a. So you just think no one in government is going to get involved in this. And I think that is right. I mean, I'm just thinking your point about independent kind of oversight, which I think is a very, very well made point. I wonder if the government could, as they did with the BBC, advocate for some kind of investigation reports. But I
I mean,
mean,
I think
what?
there could be a some sort of quango type thing
Yes.
off base.
Oh, God.
But it's setting, and that would have to cover all faiths.
Sure.
It couldn't simply oversee the Church of England.
I'm not sure that would necessarily be a bad thing, by the way.
No, I don't think it would. But I think it would be a complicated thing because, I mean, I suppose it would have to come to the point where people register as a religion with the tax office because there are all sorts of weird little sects and cults and I for some bizarre reason I'm absolutely fascinated by cults. I find the whole thing so interesting. But anyway, I digress. But I do think that having an arm's length body that sets a set of safeguarding standards, and has the power to intervene and investigate is probably the way this is going. And then government would have to get involved in setting that up. And then, in the same way that they're not involved in Ofcom or Ofwat, although I think they probably wish they were more involved in Ofwat, they would have to step back completely from it so that it was truly independent.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. You mentioned faith leader intervention on moral issues. Going through Parliament at the moment is Kem Leadbitter's Act on Assisted Dying. You and I were sort of, as we were planning this show, I said to you, I basically don't know what I think or feel on this. And let just give me a moment to explain that, because I think my view is probably fairly common, which is I cannot bear the thought of particularly older, but not necessarily, people suffering from a terminal illness, being in pain, being, distressed, when there could be. When nothing is going to get better, it may only be getting worse. And they won't tragically be around for a long time. And doctors have said that. And there may be a way out of the pain for them in a safe and loving environment. But also, I find the idea of doctors taking the life of a patient really difficult to get my head around. I have real fears about particularly older people feeling like a burden to family. I am true that there's a lot of issues where you and I are fairly, we maybe try and bring nuance to it, but are fairly clear what we think. I am so conflicted about it. I have to say, I think it's an important conversation for a modern society to have, but I am, if I were an MP, I have absolutely no idea how I would vote. I am, so just on a moral issue, so on abortion, I'm very clear where I, what I feel about it. On this moral issue, I am totally and utterly conflict. Sorry, just to be clear, I absolutely oppose, I'm absolutely pro-choice. Obviously, you can tell from probably all the other stuff I've said in recent weeks. But on this, I am truly conflicted. I think, and I cannot thread the needle between my two conflicting views.
So I'm sort of similar. I know what I feel, which is that people should be allowed to die at the time of their own choosing with dignity. I don't. What concerns me are the issues that you've raised and how to have the appropriate safeguards around that. I think it is quite clear from the way that the bill's been set out that that has that thinking is happening. You have to have a diagnosis that means that you are expected to live no longer than 6 months. You have to have two independent doctors, so not doctors who work together, sign it off. That has to then be signed off by a High Court judge. That feels like there are significant steps in place. So there are these laws elsewhere in the world that I would fundamentally not support. I mean, the Canadian model is insanely
Just explain
liberal.
that.
There are cases in Canada whereby young people who are suffering with mental health issues, but not physical health issues, have been allowed assisted dying because they're suicidal.
Yeah, I mean, that's just too upsetting to process.
And that kind of thing feels like the safeguards have completely been taken off. So this is not that. I think that I would probably land on supporting the bill, but I'd want to sit through all of the debates and l really listen to them. I was out for dinner on Monday with an MP, and I didn't ask her how she would be voting, but I asked her if this was the thing that was filling up her post bag, and she was like, "Yeah, absolutely."
Really?
An awful lot of pressure coming from both sides on it.
How interesting. I'm not surprised, but it's fascinating to hear you say that.
So yeah, I think that this is one of those things where I don't understand people who are completely black and white on it, but I also know that even if I am in the muddled middle, that a choice has to be made. And therefore, I should be doing, as someone who asks people to make difficult choices all the time, I should be trying to come down on one side or the other.
Yeah, and I think to be generous to Kim Leadbitter, she's not trying to pretend this is easy
No.
or a straightforward thing. This is obviously an area she feels very strongly about for all sorts of reasons, and that's to be respected. But she is not pretending that this is simple.
No, absolutely not. And I know that. So this is a backbench bill. It's not a government bill. But
Yes.
if it passes, the government will obviously be in charge of implementing it and making sure that it's as well managed as possible. So it will have implications. There are, I mean, one of the political complications is that Wes Streeting, who is Health Secretary, and Shabana Mahmood, who is Justice Secretary, are both against it.
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up because there was a bit of a, and I think most people have behaved very respectfully in this, and there's not been a political back and forth. The closest we've got to was Kim Leadbitter was quite upset and told the House magazine, she was quite upset with some comments from Wes Streeting, who said that it would have resource implications if it would, if it came through. He said to governors to choose, if Parliament decides to go ahead with assisted dying, it is making a choice that this is an area to prioritise for investment, and we'd have to work through those implications. Now, he is not factually incorrect, but it's not exactly the type of language I think people would like in this debate. Kim Leadbitter herself said, I'm disappointed that the Health Secretary came out to speak about the bill before he had even seen the bill. And a couple of comments that were made on the media this morning would suggest he hasn't read the bill. So that is disappointing. I don't know if he's read it line by line or not. I'm prepared to be generous to Wes Streeting and say that given the seriousness of this topic, his research is serious onto it. But this is the type of complexity that we're dealing with.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if these two people are in charge of overseeing this bill, you can imagine that given their own compunctions about it, whatever comes out at the other end of legislation, if it does pass, they will get their civil servants to do quite serious work on ensuring that its implementation is extremely firm and safeguarded.
Yeah. Is it in a lot of political debates, I think you and I tend to have a sense on the direction of travel. You know, will something pass? Is Parliament in favour of it? I have absolutely no idea what will happen next with this.
No, I think there was an assumption 6 weeks ago or so when we started talking about this particular bill, not the topic, but the bill.
Sure.
That it would pass fairly easily, that the new generation of Labour MPs would be largely in favour. And I think that was quite a glib assumption, to be fair, because it was skating over the fact that everybody is going through the complex working out that we are going through on this topic. And all of those MPs are having the pressure put on them from both sides that my friend is having. Mm. And it will be, you know, it for most people, it will not be an obvious choice.
No, I mean, how can it be? And again, Kim Leadbitter said this in this interview with the House. She said, the important thing is that this debate happens and everybody is absolutely entitled to their views on the issue.
Yeah.
As I say, I
really, really like Kim. I've interviewed her a few times. And in fact, I wrote for Ian Dale's forthcoming by-elections book on her by-election. Mm. And I think she's a thoughtful, considerate person who is trying to do her best in these terms. Whether or not people end up disagreeing with her on this issue, I don't think that, and I don't see anyone demonising her for picking this up.
No, I think I'm quite pleased that that's kind of, it seems to genuinely have been quite a respectful debate. Obviously, you know, she was a sister of the late Joe Cox as well.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So I think that gives her a certain amount of respect and gravitas, not simply because her sister passed, but because her response to that was working for the Joe Cox Foundation,
yes,
doing a lot of work about bringing people together, and particularly over contentious issues. So I think that that gives her the standing to be the right person to take this debate through Parliament.
Yeah, she's clearly a serious person, I think, is the point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, on that happy note, we'll end this week's show. Just want to say thank you for the people supporting us over at patreon.com/houseofcommentspodcast. It really does make such a difference. We're going to be doing more and more there, so please get involved. If you're there, it means you get, for just a fiver a month, my paid newsletter, Emma's paid newsletter, extra shows from this as well. So it's really a bit of a bargain, and we really appreciate you being part of it. Emma, where can people keep up with you?
You can read my Substack, which is Hard Thinking on the Soft Left. And I'm now more on Blue Sky than I am on Twitter. And I had a lovely, lovely exchange actually the other day. There's an Emma Burnell who lives in Leeds,
Yes.
and she got to Twitter before I did. So she was Emma Burnell, and I was Emma Burnell underscore. But I got to Blue Sky before she did. And she sent me a tweet on Blue Sky, whatever they're called on Blue
I
Sky.
believe they're called skeets.
Geets, okay. That said, ha ha ha, you beat me to it this time.
Very
And I
good.
said, oh yeah. And they said, oh, it's all right. I've had plenty of the abuse that's aimed at you over the years. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, well, at least one of you deserves it. I'm at Charlotte A. Henry across social media. Please head over to theaddition.net for blogs on media and culture and tech as well. You can sign up to the newsletter there as well. As I say, House of Comments, patreon.com/House of Comments podcast is the best way to support everything we do. Hope to see you there, and we'll see you next week.